Welcome into the Roaring Repeater podcast here on 7220sports.com. I am your host, Cody Tucker, joined as always by Jared Newland. Special guest in the house today, and Wyoming fans are going to remember this name, I think.
Oh, no.
Dr. Joseph Ramos. You might remember from such hits as his name being in two-foot font on the 25-yard lines at Wyoming's season finale against his beloved alma mater, the University of Nevada. That caused quite a controversy. Bizarre, but welcome in, Doctor. Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate you. And then Brian, who works with you at Ramos Law down in Colorado, you guys flew up today. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having us, Cody. And Jared, nice to meet you guys and visit with you. I'm really happy to be here. I can't tell you, I was very excited, you know, coming up here, especially after you know how the University of Wyoming introduction was on the field,
and a beautiful day to fly, no wind.
Oh, beautiful day! We got the only day probably with no wind in Wyoming.
Yeah, there you go.
I was telling Cody walking up here, we used to fly up here all the time to practice crosswind landings when I was learning to fly, because there was so much wind always in Cheyenne. So today we're landing up here and there's nothing. I was like, whoa. It's maybe weird. It was God blessing Brian here, so you didn't have to come in sideways.
So it's kind of funny how we met, you know, and this is our first time officially meeting, but first time I saw your rebuttal on Facebook to the controversy in quotes, and I just thought it was fantastic. So I wanted to reach out to you and say, hey, we did a podcast dumping on these same people, maybe a little harsher than you were, but I just thought you handled that masterfully. And I'm just curious, how did the sponsorship even come about? How did that all come about to even be the game sponsor? And when did you first hear that there even was a controversy? And what are your thoughts on all that?
Well, yeah, you know, what was funny about the whole deal was, so first of all, how we learned about it was, I believe the university ended up reaching out to us. We have, you know, roots that expand out. And one of the roots was connected to the university. And we heard that they were looking for a game sponsor and they weren't finding one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's for the amount of money, right? It's a lot of money to come pour into a university, but it's necessary. And what we do in the business is, I didn't grow up with a lot. And I remember when people poured into me and our family and stuff like that, like it really, you know, means something to me. And I try to remember that each and every day and not let that fall from my memory. And so we try to reach out and help in different things. So when this came up with Wyoming, I love Wyoming. Mm-hmm. We have an office here in Cheyenne, just opened up. Mm-hmm. You know, excited about the school, excited about the place. I have a lot of friends up here. One of my good buddies, Jason Vickery, runs the Jay Foundation. He's tied in heavily with the university, and he's like one of my best buds. Mm-hmm. In fact, we almost bought a ranch together in Pinedale. Anyway, long story short, the opportunity came up. I was very excited about it. And so obviously we did it. To jump ahead, I was kind of shocked that the response was, you know, filthy PI attorney from Colorado. I was like, these guys don't know me, right? And I, you know, maybe I took that for granted a little bit, that people would know that, you know, I grew up in a small area and what my real values are.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit shocked. It wasn't a very warm welcome by my Wyoming counterparts here.
Well, and my favorite parts, and we talked about it on that show, was, you know, this guy's taking Wyoming for a ride. And I said, how? He went to the University of Nevada.
Right.
That's who Wyoming's playing today. This game's not even on national television today. What are you?
Yeah, and it's not the university paying you. You were paying the university to advertise and put your logo on the field.
Yes, a lot of money for, you know, especially for one shot. You know, a lot of attorneys, if you didn't really do it for, you know, altruistic, like true from the heart reasons, you would never do a thing like that, because you come up here, your name's on the field for a game. Mm-hmm. You spend a ton of money and you're gone. And you're a flash in the past, right? Most attorneys who, if it was somebody really trying to leverage themselves or their business, they'd be like, no, I'm going to take that money and I'm going to put that into radio for a year. Or I'm going to put that into TV for 4 months, right? Instead of one shot on the field.
Yeah.
But that isn't what it was. It wasn't all about just what can I get from this, right? Sure, you want your name out there. You know, you want to build your brand, build, you know, let people know about you. But it's not, that wasn't it. That wasn't the reason. So, It was fun. It was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed it. I think I enjoyed the back and forth. I really enjoyed you reaching out too, Cody. When you reached out, what happens, it doesn't matter where you are in life, nobody likes to be on an island.
Yeah.
And when you start reading all these comments, you start feeling like you're on an island. And when you reached out, we're like, no, man, some of us get it.
Yeah.
I was like, thank God.
Yeah, I talked to a lot of people at the university that were just like, this guy's not good enough for us, but he's good enough for the Denver Broncos. What are we doing here? And I think to stick up for them a little bit, I should say. You get a little taste of how a lot of Wyoming folks feel about Colorado, didn't you?
Yeah, well, about Colorado. And the one thing, too, that you – so, yeah, the rivalry is huge,
yeah,
which I think is actually pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing, though, and this is well-deserved, and this is also to stick up for the people, personal injury attorneys have rightfully earned their reputation as bottom feeders, frankly. I mean, without, you know, saying it any other way. And it's one of the things I've tried to change in our law firm. It was funny when my wife and I, after I finished law school, because you know I practiced medicine for 10 years as an attending at the University Hospital. Mm-hmm. And I worked 5 years of private hospitals, for Good Samaritan Lutheran hospitals. Along the way, I went to law school. And when I first finished, we would go out to dinner parties or places, and people would say, what do you do? It's a common thing people say, right? So I'm a doctor. I would never tell them I was an attorney.
Yeah.
The reason is because attorneys have earned this reputation of, you know, again, I say rightfully earned a reputation of sometimes being bottom feeders. I'm not proud of that, but the one thing I can do is I can change that.
Yeah.
And I take that personally, and we take that personally in our culture at Ramos Law, and that's not lip service. I'm giving that.
Well, and I'm not giving you lip service here either, and I told Jared this on the way in today. I watched almost every one of your Facebook videos yesterday. You can tell the culture is so good and genuine at your work. You even took your employees, how many employees do you have?
There's about 320 something. Jesus. Now. Yeah,
the page attorneys. Never stopped
going
through, and I thought, wow, this is incredible, man. And you're talking women, you're talking every color of the rainbow in this group. Yes. And I saw you took people who've been with you for 10 years on a trip to Hawaii.
Oh, man, that was so cool. Yeah, I took them and their families, and we went to Hawaii, and it was just a way to celebrate them. And, you know, something you won't see on Facebook, but we all sat down in a circle. When we got there, when we left, I forget which one it was. We sat in a circle at dinner, and as I was thanking them, I got emotional and started crying, felt like a real pussy because it just means so much to me.
Yeah.
It's, you know, these are just great people who, you know, to say stuck with me from the start is – that just doesn't even give it the credit due. Just, you know, they not only was, you know, stood by my side, but they always help remind me of the values that matter.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're why the business is what it is. And, you know, the cool thing about it is that when you start building a group of people like that, it draws in people like that, and they don't tolerate people that aren't like them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a strong culture and a strong opinion when it comes to doing what's right. And if you don't fit that, you know, there's the door kind of thing.
Love it. My boss wouldn't take me to Chili's. also, I saw a video of you talking to your people, and you might even been in this meeting, Brian, is fill your tank.
Yeah.
You could tell you were talking to a room full of people, and you were like, fill your tank, because you give so much, you need to be, you know, giving yourself some time too, and go take that trip and take some time off and be with your family. And maybe that's just selfishly. I loved your pep talk, but I think it's so true. And I thought, man, this culture is really good.
Yeah, thanks. You did watch a lot of stuff. You know that kind of inside stuff. Yeah, you know, I'm a real big believer in telling our team to fill their tank. And the reason is the one thing about law, and this applies to medicine too. You know, I'm a board certified emergency medicine physician, and when you're in the emergency department, this applies there too. But to what we do, all day you give. And what I mean by that is you get people at the hardest day in their life. You know, they've been injured. They're in pain. They might not be able to go to work. They're stressed about how they're going to get another car or how they're going to, if it's not a car crash, how they're going to get their surgery so they can get back to work. They're missing pay. You know, they're probably grumpy with their spouse at home. We get them at this low part. And what happens is whether they realize it or not, sometimes they pour that onto the staff as they're talking to them. And that's fine. That's what we're here for. We're here to help. We're here to be that crutch. But when you give day in and day out like that, when you just, you know, you're kind of giving of yourself to this person who's struggling, you give to yourself this person who's struggling, your tank gets empty. Mm-hmm. And we have to remember to fill that up. If you see a lot of, you know, pastors of big churches and, you know, people love it when the pastor falls. And I think what they don't realize is that, man, that guy's just giving every day, all day, right? He's helping all these people in need at his church. He's pouring into people, and he gets weak. And you got to help him. You got to lift him up, right? Not make fun of him when he falls.
Mm.
And that's how I look at our staff. I look at it like, man, we need to lift him up and make sure we're there for them now before they get weak. So I'm all about that. I'm, you know, we We do a lot of things where we try to keep our tanks full, and our we have a set of core values like any good business should, and our last core value is have fun. I want everybody having fun.
That's my only core value. I should probably work on that. You did say good companies, right? I need to work on that. So I did read, I don't know how we obviously did our research on you, and I don't know how you have time to do half this stuff, but the one major question I have for you is you have a black belt.
Yes.
Could you beat the shit out of Frank Azar?
Yes. That's not a question I'm abstaining from. Yes.
That's hilarious. Jared, you got?
Yeah, a question I had for you. You're in 2 degrees from the University of Nevada.
Yeah.
Were you always an avid fan of the Wolfpack going to school, or did following the athletic department and stuff like that kind of come after you were graduated?
Yeah, so now you'll see kind of the anal side of me that comes out. So while I would have loved to have been an avid fan while there, I studied and I was diligent. So what I did, so let me back up just a little bit. So I came from, I'm the oldest of 8 children. I was raised in a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, double-wide trailer. My dad is the youngest of 12. Damn. Of those 12, none went to college and didn't have the means to. Of my 8, only 2 of us did. And we didn't have the means to. And so when I got the opportunity for college, I saw it as the gift it was. It is a gift to be able to go to school, right? That's not like, people shouldn't take that for granted. Mm-hmm. So what happened was, I give you that background only to say, because when I got there, I took it seriously. And so like if there was a game and I didn't have my homework done or there was a test come up, I didn't go. And my friends would make fun of me and they would tease me and they'd be like, dude, come on. Wasn't that I wasn't a partier, trust me, when I was caught up, I get it with the best of them. But I just knew my priorities and I was very disciplined. At that point, I'd come out of the Air Force Academy. I knew what discipline was and I was very, very disciplined. And so I never got, unfortunately, I majored in biology, minored in chemistry, and there wasn't a lot of time. So I didn't get to be the fan that probably some of my buddies were that were always there, ranting and raving at every game and stuff. Mm-hmm. I liked the University of Nevada, Reno, and I enjoyed it, and they were good to me. It also wasn't a time period where they were actually really very good at anything, too. And, I think it helps people jump on the bandwagon when the team's good, right?
Oh, yeah.
When the team sucks, everybody, nobody's a fan. Well, I'm not making fun of them. I was probably one of those guys. Yeah, so it took me a while to get on the Nevada bandwagon.
Okay, and you currently partner with the Broncos, the Nuggets, the Mammoth, the Rapids, the Rockies, all that kind of stuff. And then I noticed that you're also a sponsor of Archie Colgan,
yeah.
MAA fighter, and he's a former University of Wyoming wrestler, an All-American wrestler.
Yeah.
And he was fun to watch there, and I enjoy watching him now in the MMA ring as well.
Yeah, Archie is a great, great person. I met Archie long ago. I went to his very first fight that he had. Up off 6th Avenue in Denver in this like private ring type setting in a tent or something. It was nuts. And Archie coaches wrestling for Pomona High School. My neighbor is Sam Federico, who is the head coach of Pomona High School. And talk about an underdog story. So this is a little school that shrunk and shrunk and shrunk to where it's 3A in size. But they refused to wrestle 3A. They wrestle the highest division, 5A. They've won 7 straight state championships. They're about on their 8th, and it's because they have guys like Archie Colgan coaching. Mm-hmm. The guy is a badass. He's also a great person, though, and those kids buy into him, as they do Sam Federico. Mm-hmm. So we're major supporters of Pomona High School. In fact, this year you'll see him at the state tournament. They all have new sweats and stuff, and as Ramos Law, we bought that for them because I want those kids to go there with the pride nice. They deserve to go there with. And you talk about great families and great people. So I love Archie Colgan. And I love our partnership with him. We have a partnership also with Corey Sandhagen, who's in the UFC, and yep. I spent some time last night with him. Yeah, great, great people, great people.
And what makes sports a passion for you to advertise through?
Yeah, so when you grow up in a little bitty town, my graduating class had 8 students. There's not much to do except for sports. So we all live sports, right? It was one of these things that they just left the high school open for us. We could just go to the gym and play. There were 3 high school sports, cross country, track, and basketball. I played them all. We didn't even have enough people for a football team. And I love sports, and I love being, the small town sports scene. It was what all the parents would come out for, the families would come out for, everybody. You could have went and robbed any house in town because everybody was at the game, right? And I love that. what happens is that when you get out of, and then when you start pursuing education heavily and you get out of the arena of playing sports, it doesn't mean you don't miss it or you didn't love it. And this has been kind of my way of kind of getting back into what I love. And I love all sports. I'm passionate about it. Fortunately, I have a beautiful wife who's passionate about it, the most passionate. In fact, if you ever have come to a game with us, sometimes I'm like, cover my eyes, like, oh, God, she's yelling stuff. Yeah,
that's what my wife does to me.
Yeah. So we're passionate about sports. I love the crowd. I love the people. I love the energy. And, you know, ultimately, when as a business, when you start supporting sports, you're supporting deeper than just an advertising dollar. Because that stuff is helping, whether it's a university or a high school or whatever it is. I love that. I sponsor all the trap shoots in Colorado. You'll see my banners at all the trap shoots. If it's a sporting thing of anything like that, man, I'm in.
So at the Wyoming game you were at, did you get to meet Josh Allen? And how was your whole experience?
No. Oh, it was a great, great experience. So I didn't get to meet him personally. I got to be down there by him, so it looked like I did. But you know, I think when you're Josh Allen and you come to Wyoming, if he met everybody that wanted to meet him, right, he'd still be there at the field today.
I thought he'd be in like the Pope Mobile with the 5-inch bulletproof glass around him. But yeah. He actually came out and hobnobbed with a lot of people. I was shocked.
He did. He was just you could just tell him being around him, because I was very, obviously, you know, a few feet from him. Mm. You could tell he's a very genuine guy. I had his parents with him. He was shaking hands and hugging people, and I had brought a couple kids to the game with me, and one of the attorneys came over with his kids, and Josh Allen walked up to him and gave him two signed hats. Personally, just saw him, like, identified those kids and walked up and gave them to him. I was like, God, what a quality guy. Because yeah. Those kids, they were on a high. I'm telling you, they still are.
Yeah.
That just made their life, because they were just Josh Allen diehard, you know.
Fans for life now.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. He did sign a couple jerseys for us. I know to all you Wyoming fans chagrin, yes, I have a signed Wyoming jersey from Josh Allen. And so he was very kind.
And you won't find that on the resale market.
That's no. Right. Not at all.
So the one thing that never got through to people, I don't think, is that you are from the dead center of Nevada.
Yes.
Austin, Nevada, on the loneliest highway in America.
Right.
I saw the video yesterday of you with your Tonka truck, which you said was like your most prized possession.
Yes.
It was probably all there was to do. It is a blip on the radar, and that's Wyoming.
Yes. Well, and that's the thing, and that's why, you know, when I said people don't know me here. You know, Austin, Nevada is... So the nearest doctor was 90 miles. That doctor was a little dangerous, so most people drive 112 miles to be seen. For a while, there was no store in our town. That was temporarily for a few years, and there was no store. There's like, you know, 4 bars, 2 gas stations, small little place. No stoplights, no, you know, street lights, none of that stuff. Yeah, I mean, just it's just quiet little rural town. And it was deemed the loneliest road in America by Time Magazine. Because you literally are out in the middle of nowhere. You know, the only thing you have to worry about out there is hitting a cow at night driving down the road. You know?
Well, your family was about 20% of the population, it seemed. It looked like it was about 67 people or something back when you were in school.
Oh, yeah, man, I'm telling you, exactly. We made up a big part of the population, yes.
Is funny. Anyone still there?
So my dad is still in Austin. Mm-hmm. My mom.
And he owns a gas station, right?
No, he did back then. We did briefly back then. But he's there. He then went to work. He owned a gas station shop. That's where I worked. Mm-hmm. And then he went to work for the state highway department, because you could get insurance benefits and all that, and worked for the state highway until retirement. My mom and my brothers and sisters have all moved to neighboring towns that at least have grocery stores.
Yeah. So was Winnemucca the closest?
The nearest town would be Battle Mountain. That's 90 miles.
Battle Mountain. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And I have... I think 2 or 3 siblings over in Battle Mountain. My mom lives in Winnemucca.
Okay.
And it's, so Battle Mountain's 90 miles. Winnemucca's like 147 miles. And she lives over in Winnemucca. And, yeah, they're just, as you, once you get out of high school there, there's not a grocery store there. Now there's only 1 gas station. Now instead of 4 bars, there are 2 bars.
Dang.
The bars are going down.
That's
yeah, bars are going. Yeah, we have as many churches as we have bars. Both are on the decline. Yeah, that's Austin for you.
It doesn't get much more humble upbringing than that. I mean, you know, when I was reading into your story, it was like, no wonder, like you said, it's a privilege to go to college. It's a privilege to have these employees, and it's a privilege to be you.
Yeah, I really like, you know, I just appreciate, you know, the blessings in my life. I appreciate good friendships. I appreciate a cold beer. You know, I mean, literally, my richest times are not driving to work in bumper-to-bumper traffic in Denver.
Yeah.
You know, I love the beauty of the Rocky Mountains, flying over them to go home and see my family, or being out there and going out hunting jackrabbits with my brothers, you know, and or scouting deer and, you know, glassing up a hillside all day. I love that stuff. That's my richest day, chasing chuckers all over the mountains.
You sound like a Wyoming guy.
Yeah, that's where real happiness comes from. And I'm very thankful for Austin, Nevada, and for that past, because, you know, I'm especially thankful for it when I see the world around me, because I don't get too caught up in the negatives of the world, because there's so many positive things that are so good that I don't need to focus on all the stuff people get wrapped up in, you know.
Man, you don't sound like a lawyer.
Or a doctor. That leads me to this question. So how many people out there that do you know of that both have a JD and their medical degree and are practicing, you know, one or the other or both?
Well, and I'm glad you added that last part, because so we're trying to do a national expansion right now, and I want to do the national expansion with doctor lawyers. The key is, though, is I don't want to do it with someone who went and got an MD and then never did a residency, never practiced a day, and said, I'm not going through 5 years of residency, and they just jump over to law school, which is out there. So there are MD JDs that have done that. And probably likewise otherwise. People went to law school, but they never really tried a case, never did anything, and then decided they wanted to do medicine as their passion. I want to practice law like what I believe the strength of our firm is, which is I am a practicing MD to this day. I work one day per week. And I'm clearly a practicing attorney, right? Every day. And so that's the type of partners I'm looking for. I haven't been able to find any. I found one in Arizona. And I need partners that are MDJDs in these other states so that they understand the value, they understand the message that comes with that doctor-lawyer combination. And I'm having a hard time finding them. So I want guys that practice. So the fact is yes, you can search and you will find people with MDJDs. Then go ask them how long they practiced or if they're still practicing. They still have active licenses. They still do their continuing education. Mm-hmm. You can't find them. And it's a, you know, it is. It's not just something I give lip service to in the advertising. It's a huge advantage. It's why I went into it. I mean, you know, I love medicine. If I could do one thing, I'd do medicine. But I went into law because as a doctor doing cases as an expert, I saw, man, the attorneys can't pronounce the words half the time. Yeah. They're trying to represent somebody.
How long were you in? You had to have been in college for ever.
Oh, yeah. It is a lot because, you know, with residency and, you know, some of you, obviously undergraduate and then medical school and then pile a residency on top of that and then, you know, pile law school on top of that. It was a lot. I always tell everybody that that my wife didn't like me. She kept telling me to get the hell out of the house and go back to school. But she always interrupts me. She always takes away my story when I say that because so I love to learn. Mm-hmm. I love, like, you know, I read about an hour and a half every morning. I just love, like, learning things. Why? You know, I fly a helicopter too. I love learning and just doing things. And so anyway, I told her, I was, you know, I don't know, probably 8 or 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, I said to her, hey, I think I want to get an MBA. And she said, you're getting a library card. And that is a true story.
I just don't know how you, I read that you read an hour a day. Like, yeah. I can't even fit in stuff in my day. I don't understand how you come up with all this time.
You know,
you just seem to have it figured out, and I'm very envious.
No, you know, so people ask me that. It's funny. It's kind of the same questions you get, right? And I don't sleep very much, and I never required a lot of sleep. If I sleep less than 4 hours, I feel crummy. Mm-hmm. If I sleep more than 6, I feel crummy. So I'm a 4 to 6 hour guy. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, I might go to bed at midnight or 1 and I'm up at 5:30 or 6 and I'm ready and I'm charged, you know, I feel great. That's my sweet zone. So one thing is I don't waste a lot of time sleeping. I call it waste of time. I shouldn't do that as a doctor. Actually, it's good. Sleep. Please get your 8 hours of sleep. But here's the other real key. So we didn't grow up with TV. A lot. We had like the antenna TV you turned until I was probably, I don't know, early high school. Mm-hmm. And then about my junior year of high school, so we got one of those satellite dishes. Remember they had those huge dishes mm-hmm. where we could actually get TV out in the middle of nowhere? We got TV, but the consequence of that is I never really got into television. So I sit down once a year with my wife and I watch a movie, only because she wants me to. And I just don't watch. I watch the news and I'm going to fly. And I don't watch much TV, some sporting events.
Yeah.
And so I don't waste a lot of time on TV. I don't scroll social media, except for when somebody calls me up and says, Wyoming people are bashing me. And, you know, so that leaves a lot of time. Ultimately.
That must be my problem. I watch way too many sporting events. I'm in front of the TV way too much.
That's all right. It's sports, man. It's sports. That's good.
So when you got – so to get the timeline correct, when you graduated high school, was it the Air Force Academy first?
Yes.
Because you're definitely the first person that ever went to the Air Force Academy that's been in this room or Nevada for that matter. But if you know, you know. So what was that? You wanted to be a fighter pilot?
Yes.
And that didn't work out, and then and why? And then you go to Nevada, and then that's when you start this journey.
Yeah, you know, I just think that everybody's path kind of, you know, happens how it's meant to be if you just let it happen. And so my dream was to be a fighter pilot. That's all I wanted to do. And I mean, literally, I had one thing. I wanted to be a fighter pilot. I could think not outside of that. And the reason was, is out there in Austin, Nevada. So the Fallon Naval Air Base is 112 miles away from us, and it's all flats out across there until you come to the mountains. Austin's in the mountains at about 7,000 feet. And the Top Gun Academy, one of their places, is out there. And these pilots would fly these fighter jets. They just zoom out across these flats. They get to the mountain range where Austin was, and they would just cut that airplane straight up, just come right up the canyon. And I knew they did it because they felt like they're putting on an air show for us, kind of a thing. Sometimes there would be a sonic boom, and literally it would break windows out of some of the businesses, and then they would replace them. And the town loved it and didn't bitch because their windows got replaced, and we got a little, you know. So I grew up seeing that and going, that was cool.
Yeah.
Right? So that's all I wanted to do. That's why I got zoned in. So I was fortunate enough to get a congressional nomination appointment at the Air Force Academy out of high school. And talk about a piece of humble pie when you leave the Air Force Academy. Because what happens is in a little town like this, it's like you have 150 parents. Mm-hmm. They were so proud of me because they send out, the Air Force sends out somebody and they tell them it's a $200,000 scholarship and you're going to be an officer and it's the West Point of, you know, the Air Force. And oh man, I was like 100 yards above the ground walking on air forever. And I come out here to Colorado, first time out to Colorado, and go to the academy, and you get in the line and they shave your head bald and they give you injections of both arms in a line and you're just going down. It was like that, completely dehumanizing. Yes. And I knew before I came, though, in all fairness, that I could not be a fighter pilot. They told me beforehand because I had 2300 vision in both eyes, which I've since had surgically corrected. At that point, they didn't allow that. Now they do, bastards. But I had 2300 vision in both eyes, and I take an allergy pill every day. Mm. Always kind of nasally, you know, just a lot of things make me congested. So I take allergy medicine every day. So they said I could be a bomber pilot or fly a carrier plane, but I would never fly a fighter jet. But man, it was Air Force Academy. I'm like, I'm going. So I came out knowing that. And I think, you know, 700 or so of us started boot camp. I think of maybe 350, 400 of us finished. There's a lot of washout during boot camp back in those days because now they've gotten soft and I guess they don't allow hazing. In those days, man, I can tell you some great stories from that. But anyway, I made it through boot camp. You become a second lieutenant. It was really, really enjoyed my time at the academy. It taught me a ton. But ultimately, I saw everybody around me excited about what they were going to get to do. Mm-hmm. I wasn't excited. And I've never really kind of settled for like second best, you know. I always liked it when you could work harder to be what you wanted to be or give a little more or, you know, something. And I felt like in the military, and they're going to tell you what you're going to be.
Yeah.
And when that reality kind of set in, so I left after that first year and didn't continue in the Air Force Academy. You have to give them 2 years for every year that they give you. So if you're, but the first year is free. So if I'd have stayed the 4 years, I would have owed them 8 years. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you stay a year and a day, you owe them 4 years. You owe them 2 years for the year and 2 years for the day. So everybody that leaves wants to make sure they get out of there before the official time starts clicking. Air Force Academy has now since pushed that out where they give you the first 2 years to decide, which is really cool. But anyway, so I left and that was my path. I went back to Nevada because of where my family is. You know, that's one thing about growing up in a big family is you always kind of draw back to your family. Went back to Nevada, and the University of Nevada, Reno was the closest school, so that's where I went.
So why Colorado? Why did Colorado become your landing spot? And did you meet your wife? And you said she went to UNLV.
This
is quite the Mountain West show we got going on here.
So my wife, if anybody out there is listening, is from Nevada, man. You'll know my wife came from the armpit of Nevada. So she came from Tonopah. Tonopah, Nevada is like, it's out, and like, it's the ugly part of Nevada. But we used to have to play them in high school basketball, and they were 118 miles away. Mm-hmm. We go over there to play them. They come to play us. My wife's graduating class over there had 32. And, of course, I had 8. I thought she was from such a huge high school, right? I was like, ah, it's not fair. No wonder they beat us, like all these kids. But anyway, so I met my wife my senior year of high school. And, been in love with her ever since. And so we came out here, ultimately, to answer your second part of your question, we came out here for residency. I did my undergraduate, major in biology, minor in chemistry, University of Nevada, Reno. Got into the medical school. Which you do the clinical, you do the classroom years in Reno because classroom.
Yeah.
Clinical years, you need to go where there's actually a lot of patients, a lot of crazy stuff happening. So I went to Las Vegas and did those 2 years and then was fortunate enough to get into the residency at Denver General, which is now Denver Health Medical Center, and their trauma program, trauma and emergency medicine program. Then we were in the Department of Surgery, Division of Emergency Medicine, and I got accepted into that. It was a real prestigious residency to get accepted into because in every field in medicine, there's like the grandfathers of the field, right? You know, in cardiothoracic surgery, it's DeBakey from Cleveland. Well, in emergency medicine, it's Markovicic, Pons, Tintinelli. Those, they wrote the two leading textbooks in emergency medicine, and they're attendings at Denver Health Medical Center.
Oh, wow.
So when I came out, I think there was 3,700 applicants for like 9 spots. So to get a position there was like highly coveted. You really wanted to come here if you could get here and you could train under the people that wrote the book. And so, yeah, that's why we came out.
Wow. That's incredible. If you can talk about this, I would love to hear, do you have any crazy stories that come to mind from times in the ER, things like that? Like I think of the show, like something crazy sent me to the ER. Did you ever find somebody with like a plunger in their ass?
I was just gonna ask you how graphic we could get, because I could tell you some stories. Oh man, I'll tell you a couple of them. Here's one that's not one of the funny ones. This is just a crazy one. So one night a guy came in and he had been stabbed in the chest, went through, hit his heart. Bled out, coated, is at the table. We knew that it was all from hemorrhage. So what happened is I had one of the other residents intubating him at the head of the bed. I was the senior on that night. So I opened his chest while I was having, you direct everybody at one time, right? You start 2 large bar IVs, you intubate him. I'm opening his chest. So I take a scalpel, cut him, sternum to back. By the way, I was good at that because I grew up hunting deer all the time as a kid, right? Yeah, yeah. All these kids that are from these cities, you used to see them with a scalpel. Oh my God, it'd embarrass you. They think they're like drawing like a Picasso painting or something. They get nowhere. You have to be able to get in there. So anyway, I opened him front to back, rib spreader, went in, put a suture through the stab wound in his heart. At this point, they already had the blood going into him for the resuscitation process because we had multiple people doing things at once. So the guy's clamshelled and he sat up in bed. Because then he came back to life. Blood flowing into his head, right? Now he's got blood again.
It's like
again.
An adrenaline shot.
Yeah, you cross-clamp the aorta so the blood doesn't go down the legs and the abdomen and below. So you're keeping all the blood basically at the heart level and above. So the minute they get blood there, it goes from the heart right to the brain. And he woke up. He sat up. I was like, oh, no. Sat him back down. His chest was open, right?
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. But, in the moment, right, you can't sedate somebody who's dead. He was dead when he hit the table. He just came back to life.
Wow.
And so that was one of the things I'll never forget, is sitting somebody back down on the table whose chest is open, who you've just, kind of got their heart going again.
Wow.
So that was one of the regular amazing stories. Here's a funny story for you, one I'll never forget. I tell this story all the time. So this lady comes in this one night, and she's got, and the chief complaint says egg and vagina.
Egg
and vagina. And I'm like, as a nurse or a triage person, what do they have up front tonight? I'm thinking, who in the hell has written this? And I mean, they think maybe she's ovulated and an egg from ovaries come down, and maybe she thinks it's gone through her uterus into her vagina. Like, I'm thinking ovum, egg, right? I go back there and I'm like, you have an egg in your vagina? Yeah, I practice, I forget what she called it, some sort of breathing exercise, and the egg is stuck in my vagina. I'm like an egg? She's like, she looks at me like, I'm crazy. And I'm like, she's like, yeah.
Was it at least hard boiled?
So I wait till you hear this. Wait till you hear this. So I put on a glove, lube up. And she's, I'm like, holy cow, this is not like an egg that's gonna crack. There's no yolk coming back. She had taken a marble egg, one of those big eggs. What she should have said was goose egg. This was not your standard egg. She had taken a goose egg and she had that thing stuck in her vagina. What happens when it went past entry, it went like sucked up in there, right? And she was not getting it out. And so in her breathing exercise with her egg, it was stuck in her vagina. This egg was so big and so stuck in there, I had to deliver it like a baby.
Oh, my God.
I tore her vagina delivering the egg.
Wow.
Here's the worst part of the story. I take the egg when after I deliver the egg. Keep in mind, she's torn vagina and everything. And I throw it in the garbage can. I'm thinking this will be good news to her. She's like, hey, I want that. She wanted the egg still.
I was like,
oh, my God.
That's why those TV shows exist, because of people like that.
Oh, right. I could tell you stories like this the whole show. I'm telling you, there's so many. There are so many great, great emergency medicine stories. I think all of the best books should be written about the emergency department experience, because it truly is unreal.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Is it more fun to rescue an egg from a woman's vagina or to win a $1 billion lawsuit?
Oh, definitely an egg from a vagina, man. Now you got to think about that one. That requires zero thought. Zero thought. Yeah.
That has to be on a true note. You know, saving people has to be one of the more incredible things in this world that you've accomplished, I would imagine.
You know, I mean, here's the thing about medicine that feels like an accomplishment, and it's one of the things I actually don't like about law at all. In medicine, you're faced with a problem, and you come up with an answer, right or wrong, and you do it, and you see the result. Mm-hmm. And in the worst case, it takes days, because maybe it's somebody with an infection, you're looking to see if it turns around. But on the most everyday case in the emergency department, it's like now. You see what happens now. If somebody's hypotensive, tachycardic, oxygen saturation is low. You see right now what you do if you're intubating them or doing whatever. And law, man, it's like you file something and, you know, people get 20 or 30 days to respond, and then they file for an extension. The judge always grants them, they get another 20 or 30 days to respond. It's a killer. Cases drag on forever. And medicine is very rewarding, because you see the result now. And the other thing is about medicine is that people are usually super grateful, because they felt really bad physically. And there's a real difference between physical anguish and mental anguish. Mm. With the physical anguish, it turns around immediately, and they know, it's like, man, thanks, doc. With the mental anguish that comes from a lawsuit, you know, there's really no winner. It always kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Because even when you win, you've been through so much, sometimes you don't feel like you win. Mm. So I feel bad for the legal clients, because it's, you know, my joy comes from seeing people happier or served. Mm-hmm. And in law, sometimes you feel like even winning, you know, if you get somebody millions of dollars, but they have horrendous physical problems for life, did they really win?
Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of stinks.
Well, as a veteran of a recent 4-year divorce, I know exactly what you're talking about. Ooh. What an absolute nightmare.
Yes. Sorry, brother.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm sending a lot of money to the lady in the office right above us, in fact.
Oh, no.
But
don't start putting any eggs in.
I should have done that. You know what I love, though? Another one of the videos I saw that I loved, because you work in a field where you can't make mistakes, but you tell your people now, it's okay. Try. Get in the arena.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, don't be afraid to fail. And you worked in a career where you couldn't fail.
Right. Yeah. You know, one thing about the law firm culture that I've loved about that relates to my past experience is, and this happens once a year, but people pretty much have the word in the office now that it better not happen. And that's, I'll walk in and somebody will be all wound up about something. They've got some depo coming up in 3 days, and they're all stressed out. So so-and-so's in a bad mood. I'm like, hold on a minute. Go right in there and realign their values. Mm. Nobody's dying, right? Like, come on. Really?
Yeah.
This is fun. Let's enjoy what we're doing here. There's nothing to be wound up about. So the difference, you know, in medicine, a bad mistake often is death and telling families that their loved one's gone. And a lot of times, you know, not a lot of times, but occasionally I'll have to remind an attorney in our office that. Say, look, are you telling somebody today that they lost their family member? Somebody just lost their kid? You know, well, no. But you're taking this that seriously? Like, really? You're taking a deposition that seriously?
Yep.
Or you're taking it, you're stressed because you have trial coming? That's, nobody's died, yep. Right? So I really do, I love law for the reason of realigning that stuff. And that's the thing, goes back to changing the culture of law. Changing the culture of law firms, changing the name that attorneys have, mm-hmm. Right? It starts with that kind of stuff. And I love when our people fail and they, what I call fail forward. And you said it right, the man in the arena. I love the man in the arena. Read that quote. I love all about that. I'd rather fail and have people laughing at me from outside, mm-hmm. Because I'm the guy in there trying, than not trying and fail and not be in there swinging.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So little shout out to RamosLaw.com, personal injury, auto accidents, wrongful death, and so much more. I even saw bed bugs.
Yeah, man, this is one of our best things. So we started a consumer protection department. We have Matthew Osborne, who's probably the leading consumer protection attorney in the country. In fact, a couple of years ago, we had the biggest verdict in the country. We don't advertise our financial results. It's not our culture. But this year, he got a $20.1 million verdict on a whole different case for protecting consumers. And if you say, well, what's consumer protection? That's when regular people get blown off. By the, the bullshit in society that shouldn't do that to them. So an example, like you've heard of banks in the past that open accounts under people's names because the feds are giving them some sort of credit for doing it. Or maybe before you've had a low credit score and you go to check it, you're like, I don't have a low credit, I don't have a late payment. And you go check on it and they got you down for a late payment. It was not even yours. Sometimes you don't even have the account. Will you send these like Experian, TransUnion, send these people letters? It's like they're a big corporation. It goes like into a file and cabinet in the corner called the trash can. Mm-hmm. You call them, you get 25 options, and you never get anybody that even's in this country, and you can't talk to them. And what happens is you're sitting there with your credit affected. You can't buy a house, or now they want, because your credit score is low, they want to bump your interest rate 2 or 3% or something crazy, right? How do you get representation with those situations? So one of those, you start a consumer protection department. So that's what we did, and it's fantastic because we protect people. When nobody will listen, we will. Here's where the bed bug story comes in. So we were one of the first law firms in the country to get a verdict on bed bugs. And there was an apartment complex that had bed bugs. They were leasing out their apartments to people. And people were complaining. They're getting bit by bed bugs all night. And they're seeing them crawl across the bed and stuff. And they're telling them. And basically, the apartment complex is, hey, you don't like it, leave. Well, housing is nowadays, right?
Yeah.
Pricing, availability. I was like, you don't like it, leave. Well, we said no. If you're going to rent people a place and you're going to rent them a place with a mattress, you better make sure it doesn't have bed bugs in it. And if you don't, guess what? You're going to answer to somebody. You might not be answering them, but you're going to answer to somebody. So we took one of those cases, Matt did, and he went and tried that case and had an incredible outcome. And now we can say we're one of the leading firms in the country on bed bugs. We get calls every day.
I think I lived in that apartment complex in Houston. I went on a date with a girl and I was scratching the entire time. And she finally took a look because she was one of those southern chicks who knows about bugs and such. She goes, where do you live?
Oh, no.
That was the only date, if you can believe it.
So hotels and motels, they're scared of you, right?
Yeah,
in that division.
Yes, they are, and they better be because you got a problem. So listen, if people just take care of things reasonably, if somebody tells you you have bed bugs, and you go, hey, great, let me try to treat that room. You're good. Just give your best. You don't have to be 100% successful. Just give some effort. You're not allowed to blow people off and say, hey, tough, you don't like it, leave. You can't rent a place like that, yep. Right? You can't do that. So yeah, they don't like me.
You got any more?
He answered all my questions.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Do you mind sticking around for a minute while we go through some stuff real quick?
I don't mind at all.
Feel free to jump in. We're just, we have a little house cleaning to do. First of all, and you are a sponsor of the Colorado Rockies.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I know you have to say this, but it's happy pitchers and catchers report day today. Major League Baseball is underway, and I know you're very excited in Colorado. About your professional baseball team.
Especially that pitching staff.
Oh, man, the Rockies.
Of course, the Phillies are opening in Denver, the only games that are outrageously expensive, so I'm going to have to pay out the ass to go to all three games.
Hey, you know the right guy now. No, you don't.
Oh,
I got you.
Oh, man. You have one of those suites up there?
No, but I have four seats behind home plate, and then I have four more along, it's either the first or the third base line. And they're outstanding seats.
You shouldn't be telling me this.
Well, listen, I can't give these things away. People do not want to see the Rockies. I'm telling you, the staff loves that we have suites and we have tickets to all this stuff and we support all these sports. except for the Rockies.
Yeah.
And Cody, you've lost 70 pounds now, so you don't no longer look like the Philly fanatic.
That's true. That is true.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. That is true.
I'm doing the carnivore diet. How do you feel about that as a medical doctor?
It's fantastic.
Is it?
Yeah.
Good.
Absolutely. I mean, think about how, you know, go back to the caveman days. Yeah. That's how it was.
They didn't know what vegetables were back then.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Extremely healthy. Tons of protein.
Well, I just went to the doctor, too, and I've been having these horrendous panic attacks for some damn reason again. I went there and she told me I've been doing 72-hour fast too. She told me to knock that off. She said that's dangerous. Do you think that could be giving me panic attacks and is dangerous?
Well, okay, so don't get me talking about medicine. I love this. So, so first of all, yes, it could be associated with panic attacks. No, I don't think a 72-hour fast is necessarily dangerous. If you're doing them regularly, they are. I think that as long as you can hit a 16-hour mark, you get all the benefits you need and fasting. If you want to carry that a little longer, fine. Sometimes it's a little excessive. The reason is that what the body starts to do is you start to react to stress, any stress on the body, right? The body wants to dump cortisol first, just a steroid, but then it wants to dump a bunch of neurotransmitters like norepinephrine, epinephrine, dopamine. Those things rev up the heart rate. They get you wired up. They get that little palpation going. Get that feeling of anxiousness, jitteriness going like you had 5 cups of coffee and no food in the morning, that kind of little bit of sick to your stomach feeling you go. That's all those neurotransmitters getting dumped. That's your body's reaction to the stress because you're overdoing it.
Okay.
So, you know, I do believe in fasting, but I believe in more of a 16 to 20-hour fast, and I think a 16 is about perfect.
The reason, you do that on a daily basis.
Yeah, well, and that's perfect because, well, just quickly.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't want to get off base on this, but if for any of you guys out there want to lose weight or you want to really optimize where your body's at, how the body metabolizes is this. You basically have a few energy sources. You have glucose, you have glycogen, you have fat, and you have muscle. Keep things simple, right? What you do is you first burn up all your glucose. That takes you, you know, it's pretty quick, a couple hours. You burn up all your simple sugars in your system. Then you go to glycogen. Glycogen is stored in the muscles. It's stored in the liver. It's stored in places. All it is a bunch of glucose kind of stuck together in little chains. It's like, you remember when you're a little kid and those little plug-in blocks that plugged into each other?
Yeah,
glycogen is a bunch of glucose. So little blocks of the glucose just plugged together. Well, then your body burns up all of its glycogen. That takes about another, you know, 6 hours or so. And then you're burning fat and protein, muscle and fat basically, right? Mm-hmm. So the fast is really good for depleting the glucose, depleting the glycogen, and getting you where you're burning some fat. And if you're maintaining your muscle, good protein, and take that carnivore diet.
Yeah, yeah.
You're maintaining your protein, burning some fat. You really get your metabolism set up just perfectly. And so that's the cycle of burning, and that's why the fast works. And so I do believe in it, and it's healthy. But yes, if you overdo it, you know, you're going to have those symptoms you're having.
I'm having a panic attack about every time I walk into the basketball arena, which is probably not good for a guy who covers basketball for a living. So
yeah,
they put me on some new crazy pills, so we'll see. We're about a week in, so we'll see.
You better call me up before you go to these doctor's appointments, man.
Is Paxil good? Last one I have for you.
Yeah, at least it's elite. So just don't come off of it quickly after you've been on it for a long time. So it's a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. That's a class of medicine it is. And what happens is it increases at the end of your nerve terminals in your brain that govern these type of things, and your body for that matter. It increases the level of serotonin, and because it stops the uptake of it, so there's more of it. And serotonin tends to be good for mood, good for feeling, good for stability, balance. Very safe, practically can't overdose on it. The problem is that if you come off of it too quick, it's not good.
Okay. So the overdose part's the Klonopin and the Xanax.
There you go. Okay. That's bad news. Yeah, one of my best buddies in high school, and there were only six guys and two girls in my high school class, but one of my very, very, very best buddies had the benzodiazepines, which those fall into, and had those with alcohol. He wasn't trying to commit suicide. He just, you know, popped some Klonopin and drank some vodka and had a good night, went to sleep and never woke up.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, not going to be doing that.
Yeah, that's not one. That's not the combo to have.
A few housekeeping things. Apparently, North Dakota State University is now in the Mountain West Conference. You know, people keep asking, what are your thoughts on this? What are you thinking? I think it's a great ad. Football only. Jared, what do you?
I agree. They needed a booster, you know, get one more team. And they are going to keep it still as an 8-game schedule, which is somewhat kind of weird to me, I think. If there's 10 teams football playing schools, why not have a 9-game schedule? And eliminate the having to go find 4 non-conference games. but maybe they will do that in the future. But and then we don't know what the schedule is going to be because this is for 2026. Usually when like this happens, it's a maybe 18 months. And
yes.
Because the schedule's already out. The opponents, we just don't know the dates for conference. So they're going to have to reshuffle that and figure out who's going to be playing who now and where.
That, how do you think they're going to do?
It's interesting.
It is interesting because some people think that these guys can walk in right away and win this conference. I am on the opposition of that because they've been, yes, they've been dominant at their level, but they haven't played a schedule at this next level up of these teams. And it's just like when they said, well, Boise State, they would be competitive in the Big 12 or the Pac-12, back the old Pac-12. Like, no, they wouldn't because they would have to play 8 or 9 of those games every single week. It's like the SEC. I mean, that's murderer's row. And it's not that the Mountain West murderer's row, but it's still a step up in competition.
Mm.
And the physicality of these teams every single week, the depth of these teams every single week.
Oh.
They haven't been used to that.
Yeah, there's no Mercyhurst on the schedule anymore.
They can go play a one-off and beat a Kansas State or a Minnesota like they've done. And, I mean, Wyoming's been beaten by FCS teams.
Yeah.
It happens on a one-off basis, but I don't think they can beat them on a consistent basis. Will they build to it? Of course they will. They have the money. North Dakota, the state of North Dakota, has the money to push into that program, and that's evident because they're it's about $20 million to enter the Mountain West and to move up a division.
Yeah.
And they paid it.
Well, and right now their scholarships are limited. I don't think this is going to be as smooth of a transition as so many Wyoming fans are writing me saying, you know, great, get rid of Boise State. Now you're bringing in North Dakota State, who's just going to run the table. And I just don't feel that either at all.
I didn't think about what you just said, Jared, with the beating week to week that the bodies take as it relates to depth.
Yes.
I think I was probably one of those people that would have written in and said something dumb. Because I know that in one game off, they kind of look pretty good sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and we've seen Wyoming beat a Tennessee on a one-game deal. I mean, it just happens. Ole Miss, Texas Tech just a few years ago in Missouri. If they had to play that schedule week to week, there's no way that they would win one of those games probably.
Mm-hmm. But if you're in that conference, on the flip side, if Wyoming's in that conference, then they're going to start getting those recruits. They're going to start building that depth. They're going to, you would think, build up that that vault too a little bit. But is what it is right now at this level.
And if they have money, like you're saying they do, it seems to me, you know, with college athletics nowadays, that he who has the money gets the athletes.
You can buy your championships.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you guys saw the 60 Minutes episode about Indiana, but it was incredible.
No.
You know, Indiana's had this unbelievable turnaround. They were literally the losingest program in the history of the sport. Aren't you from Indiana, Brian? Yeah. So you know, Hoosier football's been an absolute dumpster fire for years. But you have Mark Cuban in your alumni base. And
John Mellencamp.
John Mellencamp gives so that's what was great about the 60 Minutes, by the way. Did you see it, Jared?
Yeah.
He wants to rip heaters and watch his game. He wants to watch Indiana and smoke cigarettes. They built him a shack on top of the press box.
No.
So he can sit at Indiana games and smoke cigarettes.
And nobody's bothering him, too.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I got to watch this.
That's what money will do.
Wow.
And Wyoming, the big question is, and I think, Jared, I've brought it up on this show before, who is Wyoming's Mark Cuban? Is there one? I think Jerry Buss, who used to own the Lakers, was a real opportunity that was missed. Dick Cheney, maybe an opportunity that was missed a little. Mm-hmm. I don't know who that guy is. I don't know if there is that guy.
Well, and a lot of the people here in the state that do have the wealth, they're over in Jackson. That's not really Wyoming anyway.
Yeah.
And they have no ties to the university. I mean, you're talking your Harrison Fords, the Waltons, people like that. They just don't have any ties to the university.
They're more transplants to Wyoming than real Wyoming folks.
Like come here to not pay taxes.
Yeah, right. Maybe they need to start having a little NIL tax they apply, you know, to some of these guys.
Cause... I tell you, Doc, the state capitol is 3 blocks that way. If you want to go talk,
yeah, we're
to
going
some
down
guys.
There after this.
You want to go talk to some guys with us? Come on down.
Light them up.
North Dakota State, good ad. Of course, there's the ties with Wyoming with Craig Bohl. Craig Bohl, of course, won 3 national titles there in Fargo before coming to Laramie and becoming the longest tenured head coach in Wyoming history. Tim Polasek, the head coach now at North Dakota State, was the offensive coordinator at Wyoming from 2021 to 23. So there are those ties for sure. I think this has the makings of a rivalry. I think Northern Illinois is closer to Fargo, but I could see Wyoming and North Dakota State being arrival, and I think a lot of fans do, because they're all saying, I'm getting a lot of questions about what should this new traveling trophy be, because Doc, I don't know, CSU's leaving for the new Pac-12, and that is Wyoming's most hated nemesis in the world.
That's what I, yeah.
And they play for the bronze boot every year, and right now they have a 10-year deal that has a break in 2027 unless they can get it figured out. So they're hoping to keep this game alive, but I think a lot of these Wyoming fans are like, F those guys, let's start something with North Dakota State, which
wow.
I'm not about F those. I am about F those guys, but not not for good.
Mm-hmm.
Need to keep that game going at any cost, in my opinion. But I think it has the makings of one, and people keep saying, what should the traveling trophy be, the Craig Bull Bowl, something Bison, something. A lot of people are asking about that.
Yeah, I think keep Craig Bull out of it. I mean, he's retired. Yeah. Yes, he was at both schools, but he's retired now, and he's the head of the AFCA.
Yep.
Just leave it at that.
There's nothing better than a great rivalry, though, and so that would be really sad if somehow they didn't work out the stuff with Colorado State, because I have to say one of the best parts about the whole Josh Allen experience here was hearing him say at the end, "Will always suck to be a CSU Ram."
Yep.
He said that place erupted.
Yep. They played it on the video board at the basketball game a couple weeks ago,
oh,
too.
They did? Yeah. So there's nothing like a good rivalry. So if that leaves, you know, that'll be a real bummer. So.
Well, and Wyoming's already lost BYU, lost Utah. You know, Utah State was kind of manufactured, but that one's gone, too. So, you know, it's getting to be slim pickings because of the mighty dollar. It's really ripping these rivalries apart. No more OU. OU Nebraska. I can't stand the Colorado Buffs or the Nebraska Huskers, but I loved that game. I loved watching that game. Yeah. I love to hate watch it.
Colorado Nebraska, Colorado Washington.
Yep.
In the old days, when Washington was a force. I mean, that's a long, long time ago. It dates me, but those were great.
Yep, and they are going by the wayside, which is one of the great things about college football. It's like with the NFL, I really am not into the NFL anymore, and it has nothing to do with kneeling or Bad Bunny or any of that junk. It's just the rivalries are shot. It's just not there anymore. The hatred, like, I don't hate the Raiders anymore. You know, I guess I hate the Chiefs still because they win all the time, but yeah. I just don't feel it. I just don't feel that rivalry aspect anymore. And even something as simple as having a band in the crowd and a student section, like, it just... I think college football is so much better than the NFL, and they're trying their hardest to ruin it day by day.
Yeah, they are. I agree.
It is really bad right now.
Yeah, the current model is not sustainable.
No, and we could talk about that for another 5 hours. But
real quick, sorry to interrupt
you.
I don't want to screw your flow, but so was the answer in Wyoming, you know, football here, there is no financial source out there? I mean, who is going to step up? Is the final answer that it's not here?
No, there's financial sources. They just have to find the right people to provide those sources. Because some of the old school, they're against paying athletes.
Yeah.
They don't want to pay them, even though that back in the 80s, they were probably giving them $100, $200 handshakes.
Yeah.
You know, when it was illegal, now it's legal. Thump your chest and say, hey, I paid that kid $500,000. Mm-hmm. Now he's in the NFL or whatever it could be. Or they brought us a Mountain West championship.
And you have the one university. Yeah. Why not put your entire might behind it? And right now, what we're talking about up at the Capitol, the legislature just started a couple days ago. The athletic department's asking for $6 million to help with bills basically over the next 2 years. And the Joint Appropriation Committee already said no.
Really?
Yeah. And it's just, why wouldn't you put the stadium. And
oh, fantastic.
All the money that the state has poured into that. It's like
feasibility study out there that athletics brought in $200 million to the state. And
not only is it a fantastic stadium and stuff, but what an environment, man. The crowd was into it. It was like, I mean, I get chills just thinking
about it. The team didn't show up that day.
And that game was terrible.
Yeah, I know.
The game itself was hideous.
Yes,
the atmosphere was unbelievable.
Unbelievable atmosphere. And so that's too bad if the legislature's not going to get behind it, and if you can't find the people with money in the state that are going to get behind it, I have to tell you, it's going to spell bad news long-term for Wyoming, because these students nowadays, I mean, that's what they're all basing everything on.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I keep saying, you know, why would you build a $100,000 mansion and park a fucking gremlin in the parking lot?
Yeah, right.
I mean, why are you doing
that?
Why would you do that?
Yes.
And this state has been great about building facilities and building buildings and all that stuff, and now we're going to stop?
Oh,
I just don't. I don't get it.
Somebody better kick somebody in the ass.
Well, we're that's the down part, I guess, of living in the most conservative state in the United States. They just are not gonna. They don't want to pay these kids to play. A scholarship's good enough, but that's not how it works anymore.
No, probably why I got bashed for giving money to Wyoming to get my name on the field. Right? Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. That what we're talking about right now was the whole basis of me bitching about them bitching about you. Here we are going, please, sir, put some money in my hand. And now we're bitching about it because the guy has an office in Colorado.
And nobody in the state was going to step up to do it. They were asking people, and you stepped up to the plate.
Yeah. Right.
And it's much appreciated.
Yeah.
Well,
by enjoyable. People with a brain, it is much appreciated.
Well, thanks. It was enjoyable. Would do it again tomorrow.
This guy, Ian Brooks, is saying, what should the traveling trophy for the bowl be called, the game against North Dakota State? Also, how big of a notice does NDSU joining give the rest of the conference? Because no offense to the other schools that have joined, but the Bison are as big of a brand as there is in college football at this level, arguably. I'd say they're the Alabama of the FCS, but that's gone now.
Yeah, they're no longer there. They still bring some TV eyeballs for sure. I mean, when they're going to be playing on national TV, because they really weren't on national TV until the playoffs.
Yeah,
and maybe one regular season game.
That game against CU a couple years ago was the only game I watched all year until the playoffs.
Yeah, so they'll have some national TV games, which and they have the brand for it. So we shall see. And they moved the national championship game to Nashville last year to Vanderbilt Stadium. Out of a 13,000 or 15,000 seat stadium into a 40,000 seat stadium, and NDSU had over 20,000 people there.
Yep. No way. Did they fill the place up?
I mean, they wasn't totally sold out, but Montana State took like 10 themselves, so it was like three quarters capacity.
Well, wow. When you consider how many people live in these states, too.
Yeah.
I mean,
and to travel like that, that's
Wyoming's
a lot.
The same way. Wyoming does the same thing.
Yeah, and if it's an opportunity, especially in the wintertime, to get somewhere where it's probably going to be a little bit warmer, they're going to go absolutely. To root on their team.
Dixon Maggard, any word on how NDSU being added will affect this year's schedule? We kind of already talked about that. They're going to have to replace.
They'll just reshuffle the whole deal, probably.
Yep. There's going to be four home, four away. They're not going to lose any home games or anything like that. Dates usually release mid-February, but assuming that will be delayed as they will have to rework the conference opponents to implement NDSU, as well as the network agreements with Fox, CBS, and CW. I still don't quite understand. I know they're not going to take much of a media cut. The Mountain West did finalize their media rights deal. Same thing, CBS Sports, Fox Sports, the CW, and then the new app.
Streaming platform,
the new streaming platform, Which, what's cool about that, and I think Wyoming's going to benefit from that. They get the money when you go get this app, which I have no idea what it's going to cost or anything, but that's what you're going to have to do to watch Wyoming basketball, volleyball, all that stuff. That money you pay will go to the University of Wyoming, so I think Wyoming will benefit from that tremendously. I think they think North Dakota State would benefit from it tremendously, but I don't really see how. Because they're only in the Mountain West in football, so and their football games aren't going to be, what, one, two, maybe you're going to be on the Mountain West?
Yeah, maybe
they're
non-conference home games or something.
Yeah, so it's not going to be a big chunk, I don't think. Ethan Bird, how excited are you to sit through government proceedings with me in the coming weeks? Oh, I can't wait. That's going to be a blast.
Nice basketball team you have there, Ethan.
Yeah, Ethan, our resident television sports reporter who went to Colorado State.
Oh, you just threw him under the bus.
Here's another. Thoughts about the new Wyoming NDSU trophy. I love calling it the bowl game, B-O-H-L. Definitely need to include a bison in some way. I love the new rivalry and don't think it's not. Almost makes me miss the old rivalry, but let's be honest, a bison is a significant upgrade over a sheep.
Oh, that's good. That's
much good. Better eaten, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Corey Bunin, how do you guys feel about the new media deal? I'm ready to be done with the pack, but how do you think the new two deals compare? Also, the NDSU ad was a total home run.
I mean,
they're going to have more basketball on, the Pac-12 is, and their basketball, they're going to be an awesome basketball conference.
Gonzaga makes them such a much better basketball, and San Diego State, of course.
Yeah.
So, their media deal is really based off of that. It's not based off of football, even though we know football drives the train.
Yep.
But Gonzaga basketball is driving that bus.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're taking the Mountain West best basketball programs aside from New Mexico right now. So that really swings the door open. This is a whole other conversation, but it really swings the door open for Wyoming for those of you that feel generous and want to give to the NIL program for the Wyoming basketball team. And I hate to say that because I would want Wyoming to win whatever conference they're in, but it's about to get significantly easier to get in the upper echelon of this league. And now would be the time to pounce, I would say. Football as well. I mean, you're adding UTEP, you're adding Northern Illinois. I mean, yeah, NDSU's good. You kind of hope Wyoming doesn't end up in the Fargo Dome year one. You'd much rather have them in Laramie, I would say. But other than that, the conference got a lot easier to navigate, I think, than it was with the Boise States of the world.
Backroom deals going on who has to go there first.
Yeah, I know Wyoming doesn't want to go there first. Dylan Curry, what are your thoughts on the new offensive coordinator? Also, what are your early thoughts on the offensive line for next season? They went and got three guys in the portal, and they got three guys that are – they average about 305 pounds, guys who are seniors, juniors, guys who've done it. Masijiak from Nebraska, he's a guy who was actually battling for playing time all the way up until they made the decision right before the season last year, so played a lot on special teams. They really wanted to get some physicality. They really wanted to get some dudes that had some playing experience. So I think the offensive line, I think, is going to be okay. Unlike last year, this year the bookends are the steady ones. Now they need to fill up the three middle guys, and I think they found that with some guys that have that experience. And, yeah, it wasn't at the Division I level in some cases, like with Chandler Donaway from East Texas A&M, but, you know, we saw last year. I'm gonna roll with this coaching staff. We saw what they did last year with D2 guys and overlooked guys with the chip on their shoulder. They came in here pissed off, and they played that way. And they turned that defense around in 1 year.
Yep, and time will tell. I mean, yeah. September 5th.
Yeah.
We'll see.
September 5th at Canvas Stadium in Fort Collins, Colorado, kicking off the year against the CSU Rams.
Oh, boy.
This will be the only warm game I think I ever remember playing against Colorado State. But the new offensive coordinator is great. Met him a couple weeks ago, Christian Taylor, of course, who was with the Buffalo Bills the last 2 years. Tyler Hughes, the new quarterback they're bringing from William & Mary, he actually recruited him to William & Mary 4 years ago. They're already sharing a brain, and I can't tell you guys how important that's going to be heading into the spring. When your quarterback and your offensive coordinator are already on the same page and know the same lingo and you don't have anything to learn as far as that goes, that's going to be worth its weight in gold, in my opinion. Christian Taylor's great. He's young. He's enthusiastic. Jay Johnson was the opposite of that. He was old and not enthusiastic at all. In fact, I think I saw him smile twice, and it had nothing to do with football when we were talking about. So it didn't work. It just didn't work. And I really like this hire. Jay likes him a lot. Jay flew out to see him immediately in Buffalo right after the season ended, and this was his guy all along. And I love that he says, you know, we're going to mask things. You're never going to know what we're going to run, but you're going to feel us on every snap. And I expect this to get – now you have a running quarterback for one, which is something they certainly didn't have the last year. But I think they're going to – it's going to be more wide open, but I also think there's going to be such an emphasis on the run. We're going to get back to more creativity in the run game. They want to get back around 200 yards a game on the ground. A la Craig Bull.
Sure, make it a lot easier on the quarterback if they can get that rolling.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the defense.
Yeah.
Clock's ticking, too.
Yeah, well, and that's what sucks. He had a top 25 defense last year that completely went to hell. And Jay Sauvel dropped an unbelievable stat on us in our last meeting with him. They had in 12 games, they had 8 drives all year of 5 minutes or more.
No way.
Killer. You're never going to win doing that. You wonder why they won 4 games last year? Look no further.
Wow.
Yeah, that ain't getting it done.
And a couple of them were in mop-up duty.
Yeah, for real.
See you on.
Yep, for real. Let's see what we got on Facebook here. I think we got a few questions. 6 questions, it appears. Jeff Faust, any word on how the bowl games will be changed going forward with the addition of the Pac-12? Will the Potato Bowl go to the Pac-12? Please, God, let that go to the Pac-12. Will the Sun Bowl go to the Mountain West? I hope so. That would be fantastic. You got to get back into Vegas, too. The fact that UNLV is in our conference and Wyoming or the Mountain West doesn't have a bowl game there now is insane.
Well, and I think down the road with the new Broncos stadium dome going to be built, I bet you they get a bowl game at some point.
Yep, I would agree.
That'd be great.
I would agree. Yeah, I don't know about the Ramos bowl games.
There we go.
There you go. Yeah, that could be the new trophy, the new the new North Dakota State Wyoming the Ramos trophy. Or start a trophy between Nevada and Wyoming.
Oh, hey, there we go. Get stuff fired up.
Yeah, I'd love to get in the Sun Bowl. That's one of my favorite venues in the world. Have you been there before?
Yes.
It's incredible. In El Paso, it's built right into the mountainside. You can see Mexico from the stadium. It's really cool.
No kidding.
Yeah, really cool place. So I'm personally excited that UTEP's in the conference now. I love I love Texas. So open some recruiting, maybe not the best recruiting in the state of Texas, but it still opens the door a little bit. Bradley Foster, football transfer portal question. What do you feel is a better grab? Kids coming from P4 programs or kids coming from D2 schools that play with a chip on their shoulder? I see perks both ways.
I think you've seen that even though Leland Walker wasn't a P4, but he played at a high level.
Yeah.
At Florida Atlantic.
In basketball,
and he's good. And then the ones that didn't work out on the USC ones, those didn't work out. But then the ones that have the chip on the shoulders, I think, are the ones that Wyoming needs to, because they still want to be developed.
Yeah.
The ones coming from larger schools think they're already developed.
Yeah.
They can step in and play right away.
The one that I think is going to stand out this year on the football side is Anthony Beavers, the linebacker from USC. He's an LA kid. He was born in South Central. He played at USC for 5 years. And now they moved him to safety. They moved him around to special teams, and he stayed. And he stayed the whole time. And at USC, they're not waiting for you to develop. They are going to bring in new guys. They're going to step in right away. So he kind of got lost in the shuffle, but he stayed, graduated. I wrote a story about him a couple weeks ago. If you can take a look at it, this guy is so much more than football. This guy is incredible. Philanthropy, all that, loves the inner city youth, and it does his best to help them out. Now he's coming to Laramie to play ball one more year. And talk about a chip on his shoulder. I think this guy, he was recruited by the who's who of college football. This guy was a 4-star, the man, coming out. And he's a guy who, a lot of people probably said, oh, yeah, the 4-star who was a backup at USC. He's got a lot to play for this year. So, and he's got all the measurements, the body, the whole nine. So he's a guy. But then you look at Braden Johnson last year, a guy from Oklahoma Baptist. Tell me if you can tell me where Oklahoma Baptist is. I know you can't. Division II school who said there were more people at Wyoming spring game than he ever played in front of in his entire college career. That kid kicked ass last year, led the team in tackles, and played with a chip on his shoulder from start to finish. You remember Jared Akron's coach before that game was like, oh, they loaded up with a bunch of D2 guys and stuff. He took that personal. And what did he do that first game? 10 tackles, an interception in the red zone.
Wow.
Got the shutout for the defense.
Got the shutout for the defense, yeah.
I bet this USC guy is going to be a badass.
He is a badass. He's a badass human being. You can already tell. I can't wait to meet him. Jason Ferguson, did we do enough at the wide receiver position in the portal? I just wrote about this last night. They only got one guy from Lock Haven, which is another, I don't even know if that's D2. It's a tiny school up in Pennsylvania. I think it is a D2 program in Pennsylvania. He's 6'4", 220, late bloomer. Talk about a chip on your shoulder. That's a kid who's got one. So they got some young guys that are excited about coming in through the pipeline. Keelan Washam, by all accounts, was kicking ass on the scout team last year, so he will be infused into this lineup as well. Jackson Holman's back. Eric Richardson's back. Did they do enough? I don't know. I guess we'll see. But if I had my guess, Jared, they're going to run the ball a lot, and the quarterback's going to run a lot. And, maybe finally it'll finally open up that passing game we've been begging for 7 years. But you just need some guys to make some plays. I don't think you need a 1,000-yard receiver per se, because I think they are going to rely heavily on the run game.
Sorry, I'm looking up Lock Haven.
Middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania.
Really?
But, yeah, I don't know. I wrote about it, got a lot of quotes from a lot of different sources in that story, so check that out on 7220sports.com today.
They are Division II in the PSAC Conference.
Oh.
Pennsylvania State Athletic Conference in the Eastern Division of that.
Oh, you don't think that guy has a chip on his shoulder coming up to FBS level?
That's a drinking question for you there.
Jeez. Last one I have here is just the overall impact of North Dakota State entering the Mountain West. They were the best brand you could add from that level.
Agree. I'm Brent Vegan at Montana State and the South Dakota States of the world, the USDs and the Montanas, they're happy.
Yeah.
Because now they can go win a championship since North Dakota did it. North Dakota State did it 10 of the last 15 years.
Wow.
The Mountain West just handed Brent Vegan a dynasty at Montana State.
And now that Bobby Houck, so-called, stepped back, and now he's the defensive coordinator in Illinois.
Yep. Yep. So I get what he's saying, though, that it's miserable. Jay Sauvel said it this year, too. I've talked to agents more than I've talked to my own team this year, and it's just how it goes now.
I mean, walk-ons have agents now. It's just it's out of control.
It is.
I agree.
A couple other housekeeping notes here. Wyoming in the market for a new cornerbacks coach. Benny Boyd did tell me a couple days ago he has accepted a job at Texas Christian. He's been here for 6 years. He came in with Jay Sauvel back in the forgettable 2020 COVID-19 season.
I have a candidate. I mean, Dr. Ramos does a lot of things. Yeah. Might as well add cornerbacks coach to your.
Oh, yeah. Man.
He's got a ton of time on his hands.
Remember, Austin, Nevada didn't have a football team.
Oh. But you know what it's like to live at 77,000 feet.
Yeah, so. I do. Yes, I do. Yeah, absolutely.
And of course, like we talked about, legislature is kicked off this week. I will be down there a couple days this week. Unfortunately, I got to find a suit and tie somewhere in my closet, and go see what they're saying about this. I'm strictly there for the $6 million, to the athletics department. Of course, they're what, $40 million from the UW's block grant in general. If I hear anything crazy on that too, I'll definitely report that, but I'm going in with the eyes on the prize here with the $6 million request from Tom Berman in the athletic department. And if you haven't, I encourage you to reach out to your legislator. And if you feel strongly about it, having a good football team and a good basketball team, I would strongly suggest you get on that. Even though I have seen Representative John Bear up in Gillette, I saw one of his rebuttals to a fan, and it was gross. It was, if this fan base is as passionate as you say they are, then they should be happy to pony up $6 million like we just have $6 million falling out of our pocket because we're passionate about a program. Really frustrating to read stuff like that from guys who you know damn well already have their mind made up before they even go there, and they pretend like they read their emails and give a shit, and we know better. So
yeah, that's sad.
Yeah. Yep. So Freedom Caucus is taking some L's early on in this session, which brings a big smile to my face. Basketball, Border War number 246 this Saturday afternoon inside Moby Arena, Moby Gym down in Fort Collins, Colorado. How undermanned are these Wyoming Cowboys going to be? We don't know. Gavin Gores, of course, his left hand is in a brace. Jared Harris still dealing with the toe. Mattia Belich had the ankle injury. And Abu Magasa dealing with a bum Achilles. So they fought their ass off the other night against Utah State. But after embarrassing Colorado State a couple of weeks ago, that team is going to be out for blood. And they hit like 13 threes last night in a win at Air Force.
That CSU team, though, they're just ho-hum. They don't have a go-to guy. They don't have anybody that's really exciting to watch.
No.
I don't know. That's one of the more boring teams I've seen in a long time.
Well, I talked to Chris McMillan before that game, and he said the scout is really simple. If you can keep them under 8 threes, you're in good shape. And Wyoming certainly did that in that game. I don't know if they can keep them down again. You know, Moby Arena is a brutal place to play. It's going to be packed. It's going to be another sellout. So we'll see what Sonny's crew, his makeshift crew, looks like when we get down there on Saturday afternoon. Another personal shout out I want to give before we get off here. The Olympics going on, of course. I did a story on a guy named Jake Vetter when I was in Michigan, and he is going to be snowboarding tomorrow for Team USA, number 15. The coolest part about him, this is my non-Colorado part, Doc, is I can't stand skiing or any of this stuff. We don't do that much here. what made me proud of him is I did an interview, and they said there's this Olympic snowboarder who practices on this mountain in Michigan. And I was like, mountain in Michigan?
Yeah, right.
What the hell are you talking? There's no mountains here. Mount Brighton, which was actually bought out by Vail. It's a former garbage heap.
Really?
That they blow fake snow on, and it's got one of those belts that takes you to the top, and that's where this kid became an Olympian on a 250-foot hill in Mount Brighton, Michigan.
Oh, I love those stories.
Yeah, and the mountain is garbage.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's well, nuts. And then former Wyoming track star Sadie McCollum's alternate on the four-person bobsled team.
Oh, yeah, and then the first gold medal awarded to the United States was a woman from Jackson.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm sorry I don't have her pulled up and don't have her name, but
she didn't go to UW.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't go to UW.
Yeah.
No, good for her. I can't wait for the Olympic hockey to start. You getting into hockey at all?
Oh, yeah. Yep. You know, because of our association down there in the stadium and such with Nuggets and Avalanche, we are. And they're fun to watch.
Yeah.
I never liked hockey, I'll be honest with you. Watching on TV, I was not a big hockey fan. And then I started going to the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Love the crowd. Love the energy. Love players that don't tip over and act like everything kills them. Right. You know, if one of them acts...
You mean LeBron?
Hurt, yeah, like LeBron. If one of them is hurt, they're really hurt. Yeah. And, man, the guys just hustle to give it all. And all the guys I've met on the team and past team guys, golf with Joe Sakic and Johnny Lyle and stuff.
Nice.
Great guys. Just down to earth. You would never know it. If you didn't know because you didn't recognize their face, you'd never know it.
Yep.
That's the kind of guys I like.
I tell you, covering the Pittsburgh Penguins for a year, I'm a huge Buffalo Sabres fan, so I came into this. I can't stand the Penguins. But I thought, I'm going to cover this team great because I have no care about them whatsoever. In fact, I can't stand them.
Mm-hmm.
Sidney Crosby has absolutely killed my team his entire career. And I tell you what, that guy, when I first met him, he stood up, shook my hand, he called me Cody every single time I saw him. This is the guy, the superstar in this game.
Yep.
And just that whole locker room, for the most part, was just special. Dudes were so genuine and remembered your name, and they were just happy to, maybe not always happy to see you, but happy to see you as a person, maybe not happy about your questions all the time, but... They are great. And that brings me to a question for you. I wanted to ask who is the most famous? I mean, Joe Sakic's pretty damn famous, but I was going to say, who are some of the more famous Colorado athletes you've rubbed shoulders with?
Oh, man. A lot of them over the years.
You've been in Colorado how long?
Since the late 90s.
Okay.
I came in about 98.
Okay. So you came in when the Broncos were
killing. So, you know, over the years, I've been fortunate enough to you know, kind of, and through some of the advertising stuff as well later here in the most recent years. So, you know, just this last weekend, I was at the Super Bowl, and I'll tell you, so Peyton Manning, there was a private party I was at it. Peyton Manning was there. And there are some guys that I've met over time that are just, I mean, really, really good dudes. So
he seems like one of them.
Yeah, he's a really, really good person, very down to earth too, very simple. And he gets tugged from a million different directions.
Yeah.
And so that's tough. I'm trying to think of some of the baseball guys over the years.
Have you hung with John Elway at all?
Nope, I've not hung with John Elway at all. Jeff, who was his good friend who passed away, actually hung with him a bit. And we were at a private party where Dustin Lynch had played by the pool and, you know, got to meet him and, you know, special guy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, many of them. And I was just, I'm drawing a complete blank on the one I was going to tell you about this weekend that I spent some time with. And this is really killing me because he's such a good guy. He's in the Ring of Fame there. I believe he was either past corner or safety.
John Lynch, Champ Bailey.
Nope. I'll think about it when we're done with the interview. But just a really, really good dude. And I've hung out with him before as well. In fact, I got a picture of him here. Let me show you a picture because if I show you the picture, you'll recognize him from the picture. What happened was about
Steve Atwater?
Yep, Steve Atwater. That's it. Yep. Yeah. And so Steve Atwater might be the most gentleman guy I've ever met. Brandon Stokely is similar. I hung out with Stokely a little bit. He's also a really good guy. But Atwater, without a doubt, if you said pick a player, just pick any of them, who would you spend an afternoon with? Atwater. That guy is so down there. So I took when the Rams played in the Super Bowl in Los Angeles. I have two uncles, 76 and 78, who they've been lifelong Rams fans.
Mm-hmm.
Rams have always sucked.
Yeah.
Well, until recently. So when they made the Super Bowl, my wife and I took my uncles. We went to the Super Bowl. And we get invited to a private party, and we go to this party, and Steve Atwater was there. And he took to my two uncles and just visited with them, talked with them, hung out with them like he wanted to be around them. I mean, for a long time. And to this day, my uncles still think about it. So here's what's funny. I'm at this party. I said, you know, man, I want to tell you how much that meant what you did for my uncles. I said, you remember this picture? He's like, oh, man, I remember those guys. Because one of my uncles came wearing suspenders. We're like this fancy big-ass mansion. One comes in suspenders, both in jeans, right? And he goes, oh, those are the – he said, do me a favor. Tell them I said hi. Would you tell them I said hi? I was like, yeah. I mean, he's just personal and a good person. He's one of my favorite.
He was one of my favorite players, for sure.
Hardest hitting dudes ever to play in the league.
I'd build a team around that guy.
Yes.
Who's the most famous person you've ever met, Jared? Athlete.
Athlete? I don't even know. I mean,
you toted it around the national.
Yeah, I've been around a bunch of coaches and stuff. I didn't get to really hang out with the athletes themselves.
Well, and that's one.
Bobby Bowden and Lee Corso, Kirk Herbstreit, Chris Fowler.
Yeah.
You know, Dick Vitale.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, if I were to say one, obviously Sidney Crosby is probably he's the best at his craft. But
wow,
Tom Izzo, for me, head coach of Michigan State, he was so fantastic with me for a couple of years. And my ex-wife, her grandfather loved Michigan State athletics more than anything in the world. And I asked Tom, which I probably shouldn't be doing as a journalist, but I asked him, hey, would you mind calling my wife's 82-year-old grandfather? And he goes, yeah, I'm on a recruiting trip right now in Dallas, and I'm on a plane right now. And I go, oh, no, then don't worry about it. I just thank you for even saying that. Wow. He called and talked to him for like an hour on the phone.
No way.
And man, till his dying breath, her grandpa, that was his crowning moment just to talk to Tom Izzo on the phone.
That is, that's pretty cool. I, somebody who was cool like that in person who's a non-athlete, my wife and I went to dinner with Ted Cruz.
Oh, nice.
And the same type of thing. You could ask the guy to do anything, you know, take a picture, do whatever. And the restaurant we were at, some of my friends had come in. We were in a little private room in the back, about six of us with him. And a couple of my friends in the back, I was like, hey, I'll be out there in a minute. And he kind of caught on to what was happening. And I said, yeah, I just got some buddies off. And he said, hey, have them come in. So they came in, and it was like, you know, I think his security guard when they, you know, he's just calling people and probably like, what the hell is he doing? But also really down to earth guy who would do anything for as a politician, as much as you, not many good things you can say about politicians.
No,
I'd say something positive today if I could about a politician.
Well, and I think we can end on this. I think, Doc, something that this whole thing shows, and the fact you flew up here and everything, it just, your social media, everything you do, and I've seen you shaking your head over there too, Brian, you know, you're genuine. This stuff makes you humanized. And the fact you said you would kick Frank Azar's ass is awesome. But
that'll make headlines.
You're human.
Oh, well, thanks, man. I've enjoyed the time together. It's nice to you know, meet both of you and hang out here with you. And appreciate Wyoming. Appreciate this opportunity.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming up, man, and spending some time with us. It's been great.
Thank you.
Awesome. Anything else?
One thing I want to say, I lost a dear friend who played football for the University of Wyoming on Sunday. He passed away unexpectedly. And Mike Fitzgerald, number 72 offensive lineman on the 93 conference championship team. And so everybody go have a Fitz and Coke tonight. That's a Jack and Coke for the people who don't know. But
Where was he from?
Sheridan High School in Denver.
I knew Mike. Yeah. I met him a few times. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, that's too bad. I hate to hear that.
Yep.
Hate to hear that. Hate to end on that note, too. But Wyoming CSU, Saturday, 2 p.m., Moby Arena. We'll be back here soon. We'll do a little something here soon. We got NFL Pro Day coming up. Wyoming's spring football begins on March 24th, I believe. The game is on April 25th. It will be closed to fans throughout, aside from the game, simply because they're playing Colorado State first, and you know, can't just have anybody and their mother coming up to watch you practicing and see what you're up to.
When wrestling has another ranked opponent coming to Laramie this weekend, and OU.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yep, plenty going on at the old University of Wyoming, so check it out, and once again, write your legislators, please. Tell them we sent you. Have a good week. My soul, my thoughts, my love.